Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School, the podcast about the ever-changing landscape of federal acquisition and fiscal law. I am Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm Major Hian Muniz.
And I'm Major Jason Floyd. And together, we're your co-hosts. So Ellie, what are we talking about today?
So on August 20th, SBA published two proposed rules that together would rewrite how the federal government decides who counts as a small business.
And the headline number that's been bouncing around the government contracts bar is this. Under the proposal, a company with up to $500 million in annual revenue could be a small business. That's crazy.
So we're going to start from the foundations, what a size standard is, what a size standard even is, where it comes from, how it's measured, and then build up to what SBA has actually proposed and why practitioners are arguing about it.
Yeah, great idea to start at the beginning, Ellie. So the Small Business Act, currently codified at 15 U.S.C. Section 632 et sec, defines a small business concern as one that is independently owned and operated and, quote, not dominant in its field of operation. This is a beautiful phrase, but completely unusable in like an operational test, right? Mm-hmm. And so you really can't put not dominant in its field into a solicitation or a clause or anything and expect a KO to evaluate it on any given day. And that's why I think SBA's got some regulatory power there.
Right. So Congress told SBA to issue detailed definitions by regulation, and that's 13 CFR Part 121, the size regulations, which converts that abstract idea into a hard number for every industry in the economy, key to the North American Industry Classification System, commonly called NIACS.
And that's the piece that a lot of practitioners miss, right? There's no single size standard across all industries. There are roughly 1,000 NAICS codes right now, one for essentially every six-digit code. So being small is not like a property of your company. It's a property of your company in relation to that specific procurement NAICS code.
Which is why you can be small on Monday and other than small on Wednesday without hiring a single person if you just bid on a different requirement.
It's kind of like an identity crisis almost. Sorry, that was a bad joke, kind of.
So two ways SBA measures it. Some standards are receipts-based, a dollar figure. Some are employment-based, a headcount. Manufacturing and wholesale trade run on employees. Most services run on dollars.
And the measurement rules are more particular than people expect, in my experience. So under the SBA's regulations, the receipts, that term means total income plus cost of goods sold as reported to the IRS, with a short list of exclusions, of course. Those receipts are then averaged over a period of 5 years, and that figure is used to calculate whether the business is a small business concern.
And under Section 121.106, employees are the average number of all employees per pay period over the preceding 24 months. All employees. Part-time counts the same as full-time. Temporary counts. There is no full-time equivalent math, which surprises firms that staff heavily with part-timers and assume it discounts.
And in both cases, whether it's receipts or headcount, you include the receipts or employees of all your affiliates. And affiliation is control, actual or potential, direct or indirect, and exercised or not.
So common ownership, common management, identity of interest among family members, newly organized concern, or ostensible subcontractor rule where your sub is really running the contract, all of it can aggregate somebody else's numbers into yours.
Now timing. Section 121.404, size is determined as of the date the concern submits a written self-certification that it is small, as part of its initial offer, including price.
And that's key, right? The initial offer that includes price, not the initial proposal on like a two-phase design build or other type of proposal or solicitation response that isn't actually that initial offer that includes award. That date is where the snapshot gets taken, and that's important.
And the enforcement mechanism is a size protest. Under 121.1004, an offer generally has 5 business days after receiving notice of the apparent successful offer to protest that offer's size in writing.
5 days is tight.
It is tight. And a lot of people don't realize that it's actually before award. you have to have notice of the award, wait 5 days, then award.
Right.
And that's when the protest is supposed to happen. We have received one. I have received one.
Nice.
Yes. Like I said, the apparent successful offeror to protest that offer size in writing to the contracting officer who forwards it to the SBA area office. The area's office issues a formal size determination, and that goes up on appeal to SBA's Office of Hearings and Appeals.
Or OHA. So separately though, and people seem to conflate these sometimes, you can appeal the NAICS code that the contracting officer assigned to the solicitation without actually saying that a particular concern is not a small size business. Different regulation though, different clock. You get 10 calendar days for this one, and that calendar day countdown starts after the solicitation is issued or amended, and then that goes to a different office. It skips the area office and goes straight to that OHA.
Which matters enormously because picking the NAICS code picks the size standard, which picks the competitive field. The NAICS appeal is the only fight in this area where you get to choose the battlefield before the battle.
That's really deep, Ellie.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
And if you miss those 10 days, then you really have made a strategic decision. You just made it accidentally, right? You can't bid on that anymore because you're not that NAICS code provider.
So that's how the numbers get applied. The proposals are about how the numbers get set, and that's a corner of administrative law almost nobody visits.
So by statute, the SBA has to review every size standard at least once every 5 years, and SBA does this through a published methodology. Historically, it's a white paper describing the economic analysis behind each number.
The methodology that's been in place through the current review cycle worked roughly like this. SBA looked at a basket of about 7 industry factors: average firm size, the 4-firm concentration ratio, startup costs and entry barriers, distribution of firms by size, and on the federal contracting side, the small business share of federal contract dollars relative to their share of industry receipts.
Taking all that, SBA would calculate a supported size standard from each factor separately and then average them, and then compare that results against what are called anchor values, the sort of baseline receipts figure and 500 employees. It would either adjust it up or down from that anchor, depending on whether the industry looked bigger or smaller than average.
And there were guardrails, minimums and maximums. SBA generally would not move a standard beyond a certain band in one review. And as a matter of policy, it was reluctant to lower standards except where the analysis was overwhelming.
And then layered on top of that, the SBA periodically adjusts every receipts-based standard for inflation, which is a separate rulemaking and is why the dollar figures creep upward between reviews without any real economic conclusion changing at all.
Fine. Complicated, technocratic, but coherent. Now here's the proposal.
Yeah, so 2 proposed rules, both published on the same day. The first one is small business size standards. That one sets the actual numbers. The second one is small business size standards, revised size standards methodology. And that's the one that changes how those numbers are derived.
And they're paired deliberately. The methodology rule is the engine. The size standards rule is what the engine produces. Comments on both are due next month.
All right, so there's 5 estimated effects. The first one is consolidation. Today, there are roughly 995 size standards at the 6-digit NAICS level. The proposal collapses those 900 or so into 338 standards, 276 of which are at the 4-digit industry group level, and then 62 at the 5 digits.
That's a huge reduction.
That is a huge reduction. Consolidation, I guess, is a better way to
consolidation,
put it,
right? Yes.
So instead of a distinct standard for custom computer programming and a different one for computer systems design and another for computer facilities management, you get one standard for the whole 5415 family.
Yeah, and along with that, SBA proposes eliminating all 18 of the federal contracting exceptions, those footnoted carve-outs that sit under certain NAICS codes with their own special thresholds, the IT value-added reseller exception, the military and marine engineering exceptions, all of those gone.
Which would make the size standards table dramatically shorter.
Yeah, that's right. And then, so number 2, after the consolidation, is just a new formula, right? So this 7-factor average is out. In its place, it's a single measure that the SBA is going to call average market size, and it's got 3 inputs. First, total size of the national industry. Second, the number of distinct geographic markets in which the firms compete. And third, net imports adjustment. The theory being that these three things map more directly onto the statutory phrase, quote, not dominant in its field of operations. If the field is enormous and the firms compete in many separate geographic markets, it takes a much bigger firm to dominate it, so the standard should be higher.
So, and then number three, the caps come off. Under the proposal, there's a floor. 500 employees on the employment side, 30.6 million on the receipt side, but no ceiling. Whatever the formula produces, that's the number.
And the formula is going to produce some numbers, right? So engineering and related services currently at 25 million in the NAICS code 51-1330 comes out around 252 million at the group level. That's a lot of consolidation.
Yes.
Computing infrastructure and data processing goes from like 40 million to 402 million.
It's huge.
It's all very huge. R&D in biotech and nanotech moves from 1,000 employees to 2,800 employees.
Well, that's probably reflective, though, of the advancements that are just happening in that industry in general.
You need a lot of software engineers. You need a lot of everything when you're doing that kind of stuff, sure.
So to say the quiet part out loud, under this proposal, a firm doing $500 million a year in systems integration work would compete for a small business set aside?
I'm curious to see the comments that come out on some of this.
It'll be interesting, right? Because on one hand, it is very streamlined. Everything's easier to understand. The numbers are easier to run. There's not a lot of mysticism. But on the other hand, it's like, yeah, you've got what would originally be thought of as a really big business competing against like mom and pop.
So number four, employment becomes the default. So SBA proposes using employment-based standards wherever it has discretion. Statute requires receipts for a handful of service industries, and it can change those. But the net effect is that receipts-based standards drop from 496 to 129, and employment-based standards go from 478 to 208, with about 64 industries flipping measures outright.
And the rationale there is honestly like sensible, right? Headcount is more stable than revenue. Under a receipts standard, one unusually good year can graduate you out of the program, and a five-year look back means you have to carry that value for a while.
Mm-hmm. And number five, this is the new one, a productivity adjustment. SBA proposes to adjust receipts-based standards not only for inflation between reviews, but for economy-wide productivity growth as well. The argument being that technology and workforce skill push firm revenues up faster than prices alone.
Which means the numbers will now escalate on two separate tracks.
And then the policy choice sitting underneath all of it. The analysis identified 45 industries where the math supported a lower size standard. SBA proposes not to lower any of them, not one. It proposes to hold every one of those industries harmless.
And the stated reasoning for that is that the Small Business Act's directive to aid, counsel, assist, and protect small business interests, plus the economic conditions of 2021 through 2024, you know, post-COVID, plus a concern about the benefit cliff, the idea that a firm approaching the threshold has a perverse incentive not to grow. We don't want any of that, right?
The aggregate effect, roughly 1,114, 541 additional firms would become small.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's about 1.8% increase in the small business universe, though. So it doesn't seem that big.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
When you put it in that, you know.
We have a lot of small businesses.
That's how this passed.
And of those, about 37,000 are firms that already hold federal contracts. Something like 106,000 contracts worth roughly $71 billion in fiscal year 2025.
Man. So $71 billion worth of current work, or work being currently performed at least, by other than small firms would, on the day this rule becomes final, would be performed by small businesses. That's cool.
All right, let's talk consequences, because this is where it gets real interesting for the people we teach.
Yeah, start with the rule of two, right? So FAR 19 talks about the rule of two, so does the CFR, the SBA's regulations in the CFR. The contracting officer set aside when there's a reasonable expectation of offers from two or more responsible small businesses at fair market price. So you widen the definition of who is a small business by 100,000 firms, and all of a sudden you have expanded the number of requirements that rule of two is going to satisfy.
So more set-asides, which sounds like an unambiguous win for the small business community. All right, now protests. Consolidating to four-digit code should reduce a whole category of NAICS appeals. the ones where the fight was between two adjacent six-digit codes with different thresholds. If both codes now roll up to the same group standard, there's nothing left to argue about.
But it does not eliminate NAICS appeals. It relocates them. The fight moves up a level. Is this a 54-13 requirement or a 54-16 requirement? And the stakes on each one go up because now you're arguing over a whole industry group.
Yeah, good point, Ellie. Two more quick ones as an aside. First, the socioeconomic programs like 8A, Hub Zone, Women-Owned Small Business, all that, they're all keyed to the same size element to that same industry size standard. So this proposal silently widens eligibility across every one of those programs without actually having to amend any of those rules specifically.
And the limitations on subcontracting at 13 CFR section 125.6 don't change at all. 50% of the cost of services still has to be spent on the prime's own employees, which at these thresholds is a compliance obligation of a very different magnitude than it used to be.
Not having to focus on a change to the limitations on subcontracting sounds like a great point to end this podcast. This has been a lot.
All right, Jason. Give us some takeaways from this episode.
All right. So the first one, this is a proposed rule, right? So comments close next month. And then if you're actually going to advise on what's going to happen, you got to make sure that you read the final rule when it comes out in a few weeks or months or whenever that is. Two, go find your NAICS codes and figure out where they land after consolidation. Maybe that one or two or dozen that you used to use are now all consolidated and have different titles. So you want to make sure that you're priming the charge, so to speak, so that you know where you're headed.
All right. Thank you, Jason and Hiena, for that fascinating topic. So we'll see what happens in the next month with comments. Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.